The kind of burgers you get today tells you a lot about yourself. You're either someone who settles for sad, same old burgers, or you're at a Carl's Jr., obsessed with a tangy OG Western Bacon Cheeseburger, demanding a house-made guacamole-loaded guac bacon, fired up for the insanely hot El Diablo, or craving a classic Charbroiled Famous Star. Give in to your flavor cravings. Get your mouth to Carl's Jr.
Big Burger!
Good Burger.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian makes the team collaboration software that powers enterprise businesses around the world, including over 80% of the Fortune 500. With Atlassian's AI-powered software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom, you'll have more time to do the work that matters. In fact, Atlassian customers experience a 25% reduction in project duration per year. Unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
I'm Candace Lim.
And I'm Kate Lindsay. And you're listening to ICYMI.
In case you missed it.
Slate's podcast about internet culture.
And Kate, can I ask you like a controversial question?
I don't think anything good starts with that statement, but yes, you may.
Okay. How do you feel about voice notes? Not the Charlie Puth album, but voice notes, like voice memos that you send to people.
Don't worry, Charlie Puth's album did not enter my mind once.
Wow. Okay.
But in terms of voice notes, so yeah, these can be, or I guess the existence of voice notes and people using them, I guess, is polarizing, which I didn't know because I love getting a little voice note. What about you?
Same. I'm pro voice note. I find them really cute and fun. I know people make fun of them on TikTok when they're like, when your friend sends you a 9-minute podcast. And I'm like, okay, well, this podcast, I guess, is a really long voice note. But I'm into them. They're efficient. And sometimes I want to hear, especially if it's tea, I want to hear the inflection. I want to hear the tone. I actually want some Foley artists in the back hitting the slap, things like that, you know?
Well, I feel like if someone's sending me a voice note instead of text, I interpret that as they want whatever they're saying to disappear, like for it to not be in writing.
Okay.
And so the moment I see that, my heart rate jumps. I'm like, I'm about to get some tea. And it's actually really disappointing when sometimes I'm like, all right, time to settle into my podcast of my friend giving me the goss. And it's just like a friend who was too busy to type. See, that's when I don't like them, actually.
I'm like,
if you're sending a voice note, it needs to be juicy. Otherwise, you can just text me your musings.
Yeah, I mean, look, as if voice notes weren't controversial enough, you know, they're also ending up in lawsuits, Kate, because I am talking about the voice message that Justin Baldoni allegedly sent Blake Lively as part of an ongoing PR battle between the two stars of the movie It Ends With Us.
And an important fact about this voice memo is it is 7 minutes long, which for those of us who are lovers of sending voice notes, know that they cut off after a certain amount of time.
Right.
Like, I think it's like 2 minutes. And so especially when you or your friend is telling a really long story, the story is always punctuated by moments of them going, all right, hold on, I'm starting a new note. And for me, I'm like, is that what's happening in this 7-minute voice note? And like, that's embarrassing.
It's cringy. I mean, it's a good question. I have thoughts on that. But I do want to back up for a second and maybe give some context. So this past week, the Daily Mail published what they call a voicemail. TMZ calls it a voice message from Justin Baldoni to Blake Lively. And according to the Daily Mail, Justin sent this while they were working on the script. Apparently, there was like a conflict about a rooftop scene, which I have heard about.
I've heard about this conflict. And so I think it's something to do with that Blake Lively wanted to rewrite it. But Justin Baldoni, who was directing, he did not respond well to those changes. But this voice memo, however it was sent, seems to be him apologizing for his reaction, responding to some of her concerns. And we're going to dive more into this case and explain what's going on between them and why this voice note even came out. But I just want to say I was so turned off by how long this voice memo was that I actually have not listened to it yet.
And good news for you, because guess what I did? I listened to the full 7 minutes, so you don't have to. I Would love to play you some audio. Is that okay? Because unfortunately, like, snippets of it are making the rounds on TikTok. Let's start with this clip.
Hey, Blake. It is 2 a.m. Hopefully this does not wake you up. Whew. Wow. There's so much I want to say to you, and I hope that we can FaceTime or see each other in person soon and get to talk more. But I'm just going to send you a few thoughts, and hopefully it's not going to be more than a few minutes. But that I don't have the best track record. I don't think either one of us have the best track record for our voice memos. I want to start with an apology.
Okay. I'm sensing a visceral reaction happening in the studio tonight. Kate, first off, first reaction, what are you feeling? What are you thinking?
Oh, you know, I know I'm new to podcasting. I hope to be here for a while. I hope that being a podcaster doesn't change how I send voice memos, because that's what that gives. He does, or he did, the Man Enough podcast. And that is someone who is like, I am on mic.
Yeah.
What I'm picturing when he sends this, like, I immediately, just his tone of voice, I'm like, that man is laying in bed. And he specifically has his arm, like, back over his head. Ooh. He's lounging. Like, it was so gravelly at certain points.
Yes. And let's just say it. Are we getting bedroom voice vibes?
Yes. Like, he's in bed. Mm-hmm. It's so inappropriate. Like, I don't know how you could sort of declare something inappropriate based just on vibes, but everything about this is like,
yeah.
He's sending it at 2 a.m. also, right?
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
Everything about it is like, hey, up late thinking of you, laying in bed. Ooh. But it's like a professional voice memo.
Okay, so you're picking up everything I picked up. And just imagine the fact that I had to listen to 7 minutes of this. It doesn't get better. Here's the deal. This audio is circulating on TikTok because I have seen users being like, is this what those erotica audiobooks sound like? First off, the answer is yes. And this is what Joe from You sounds like. Also, yes. I mean, stepping back for like 1 second, Justin Baldoni, we have to remember, was an actor on a very great show, Jane the Virgin. He played Raphael. That is a show that I think kind of pulls at these, let's say, acting chops, this tone. And I couldn't help but think and picture everything the same way you're picturing it. He says in the voice note, it's 2 a.m. in the morning. Like all of the little like ad libs, the little like coughs and stuff. I'm kind of like, it sounds like you're kind of performing. I don't know. What other questions do you have?
It's very put on.
Yeah.
Now I'm like thinking about it. Like, this isn't giving, I am just dashing off this voice memo in iMessage. He has opened up the voice memo app and is orating.
You brought up an earlier really good point. Was this divided into chunks? I'm of the belief, as someone who listened to, once again, all 7 minutes of it, I think it was continuous. And that kind of adds to your point of like, I literally think instead of being an iMessage, hitting the like button and going like recording straight to the app, I think he definitely opened the app, recorded it, whatever. Here's my other question. Kate, do you think this was his first take?
Oh, that's horrible to hear. That's horrible to consider.
Speculation.
No, it's not. It's not. Yeah. Maybe the first take was sounded more natural. And by this point, that's how we get this vibe. But, you know, it's out of context. And that's maybe what's happening here with this voice memo, is that kind of anything can be made to look bad out of context, just clipping a little snippet, or in this case, 7 minutes. Because there was a report that found that a lot of the online hate against Blake Lively that has kind of emerged in the midst of this battle, which we'll get into, that hate is determined to be around 50% inauthentic. Essentially, Justin Baldoni hired a PR expert named Melissa Nathan, who, quote, went hard at the press, pushing to prevent stories about Mr. Baldoni's behavior and reinforce negative ones about Ms. Lively. This is from a big report that came out in the New York Times. And then another person involved in this, Jed Wallace, is a self-described hired gun. He led a digital strategy that included, according to the New York Times, boosting social media posts that could help make Justin look better. So from Meghan Markle to Amber Heard to Blake Lively, we've heard these kind of stories before, and now it's really starting to seem that the template for taking down a woman on social media has fully been solidified.
Yeah, and While this is not the first time this has happened, I have a bad feeling this is not the last time a powerful Hollywood machine is going to, like, use voice memos and the internet and fandoms against each other. So, let's break down how we got here after the break. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there a part of your personal story you've been wanting to revise in 2025? Or maybe you're just ready for a plot twist? Every January brings 365 blank pages waiting to be filled. Life isn't about resolutions that fade by February. It's about picking up the pen and becoming the author of your own life. Therapy can help you write new chapters and create the meaningful story you deserve to live. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online, making therapy more accessible, affordable, and convenient. BetterHelp has a diverse network of more than 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with the licensed therapist. If you feel like your matched therapist isn't the right one for you, you can easily switch therapists anytime at no extra cost. Write your story with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ICYMI today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ICYMI. 2025 is here. Make a resolution to save serious cash by making the switch to Mint Mobile. Right now, you can get half off their three-month unlimited plan. I've been using Mint Mobile for the past 3 months, and I gotta say, I can't believe how much I've been saving by switching to Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile is offering any three-month plan for only $15 a month, even their unlimited plan. Switch to Mint and new customers can get half off an unlimited plan until February 2nd. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/ICYMI. That's mintmobile.com/ICYMI. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Hi, listeners. I hope you're enjoying today's show. If this is your first time listening, then welcome. We're thrilled to have you here. In case you missed it, our show comes out twice a week on Wednesdays and Saturdays. So make sure you never miss an episode like this past Wednesday's when we debated whether it's time to boycott the biggest social media platforms and ask, where should we go next? And we're back. Okay, Candace, have you actually seen It Ends With Us?
Oh, I'm so sorry, but no, I have not seen the hit Colleen Hoover film adaptation, nor have I read the book. Have you?
No. And so I think it's good we just kind of get that out there right now.
Yeah.
The moment I found out about the Ellen DeGeneres at all of the book,
sure.
Have you heard about this?
No. Explains.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited to tell you. Essentially, a lot of the book is formatted with the protagonist writing fan mail to Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, uh-huh. That was just spooky to me, I'll say. And so I stayed far away.
I mean, okay, so that's hilarious. The other thing that makes me laugh is the fact that I feel like some of the biggest dramas or scandals to emerge from film sets of late have always been from not great movies. Like, mm-hmm. I am thinking about Don't Worry, Darling, Remember That, and the whole, like, Olivia Wilde, Harry Styles, Florence Pugh, did Harry spit on Chris? Like, that whole supposed conflict was such a big story for such a critically not well-received movie. But getting back to this movie that we're talking about today, I think we should start with some background, you know, a little quick crash course about who's accusing who of what and why. Kate, where should we begin?
We should begin with It Ends With Us, okay. A movie, which is the most I think we can really say about it.
Right.
But it stars Blake Lively, Justin Baldoni, and Baldoni also directed the movie. So this movie came out back in August 2024. Like we said, we aren't going to be seeing it at the Oscars this year. Mm-mm. It got so-so reviews. Things heated up on December 20th when Lively filed a civil rights complaint against Baldoni alleging sexual harassment. And later, his team waged a smear campaign to discredit her in case she ever spoke out about these allegations. So that's what the big New York Times story dug into, which came out on December 21st. Justin Baldoni has denied Blake's claims of sexual harassment and has sued the New York Times for libel, as well as filed a suit against Lively for civil charges like defamation.
Yeah. And there's been some great Slate reporting on the details of this. But what we're going to talk about is how the internet played a huge role in the saga. I mean, as the film was first rolling out, people had already noticed that stars Blake Lively, Jenny Slate, Colleen Hoover, they were not following Justin Baldoni on Instagram.
This is such a common thing that's reported that it's wild to me that it still happens. Mm-hmm. I guess for two reasons. One, because people clearly track and notice these things. But two, mm-hmm. I guess I just don't believe also that someone like Blake Lively is sitting at home actually scrolling her own Instagram feed to the point that she needs to unfollow Justin. Like, can't she mm-hmm. just mute? I don't know. That's right. Always been crazy to me. But people saw that. They picked up on it. They posted about it on platforms like TikTok. And so then when they started doing press for the movie, people were already ready to look out for their dynamic, and it became very clear that they were avoiding each other. And in fact, most of the cast was not really doing any interviews with Justin. Mm-hmm. So at first, the narrative was like, what did Justin do? And then really quickly, the narrative shifted, and it was suddenly, Blake Lively sucks. So this is where this alleged smear campaign comes in.
Yeah. The New York Times, they obtained a whole trove of text messages between Justin and his PR team, and they appear to lay out how they wanted to use web media and social media as a tool to hit back at Blake. I think what you and I both gravitated toward in the Times piece is this part where Baldoni allegedly sends a screenshot to his PR crisis team of a Twitter thread called Hailey Bieber's History of Bullying Many Women, Not Just Selena Gomez, throughout the years. And I've seen this thread in the wild. It's like videos and screenshots of Hailey Bieber being rude to other celebrities. It was posted by a Selena Gomez fan account. And Baldoni cited this, saying, this is what we would need. Meaning, he wanted to use the internet to, like, turn the public's opinion on Blake.
Do we think Justin Baldoni follows Selena Gomez fan accounts and that's how he came across?
He's the fan
this?
Account. He's the fan account, of course.
He is the fan account.
He voted for her for Emily Perez, of course.
Yeah. So Baldoni sends this thread as sort of inspiration. And then there's a good chance that during this time, you came across some content that was anti-Blake on social media. So this first started with people saying that Blake was not really being sensitive to the film's core issue of domestic violence while she was doing press. And in fact, she was promoting her own products. A big one, though, that I think a lot of people probably came across or heard about was a video by Sjeste Flaa, who's a Norwegian entertainment reporter who did an interview with Blake back in 2016. Mm-hmm. And so I remember in this, Sjeste says, you know, oh, congrats on your little bump. And Blake responds kind of snarkily, maybe congrats on her bump. So when she posts the interview on YouTube with the title, Blake Lively Interview That Made Me Want to Quit My Job, because as she told the Daily Mail, she's infertile. So she felt like Blake's comment was insensitive, even though Blake wouldn't know that. I don't know.
Yeah. And according to the Times, one of Baldoni's PR people texted someone saying, we're crushing it on Reddit. And we've started to see a shift on social due largely to Jed and his team's efforts to shift the narrative. I mean, one of the publicists, Melissa Nathan, wrote to another person on the team, it's actually sad because it just shows you how people really want to hate on women.
Oh my God. That's literally the I think you should leave hot dog meme where it's like, we're all trying to find the guy who did this. It's like, oh, I can't handle it. So then this New York Times report comes out, and a lot of people who were cited either as inspiration or who actively drove some of this hate had to reckon with their involvement. For instance, the Selena Gomez stan account behind that original Hailey Bieber thread tweeted, now why is Justin Baldoni screenshotting my tweet and sending it to his PR team to smear a hate campaign against Blake Lively with crying face emojis? Mm-hmm. Which shows how subtle this campaign was at infiltrating our timelines, but also I would just like to say, if I found out that my Twitter thread was being used as an example of how to harass women online, I would reflect. But moving on. So the Norwegian reporter we were just talking about, she also claims that she did not coordinate or get influenced by anyone associated with the alleged campaign to recirculate that interview. She did it all on her own.
Kind of capitalizing on a moment, being like, ooh, maybe I can get some likes.
Right. That's, I think, a big part of this. Because I remember seeing all this. I saw compilations on TikTok of Blake being quote unquote rude to interviewers. I saw the Norwegian reporter. She was making lots, not just sharing that video, but doing front-facing videos. She was really in this. But I don't follow any of the people involved in this movie or the people I was just talking about. But as it became a news moment, people realized that content around this news moment was more likely to get engagement. And so every creator, you know, they're looking to get more views, whether or not they actually really have any thoughts about this scandal. They're like, well, I need to find my way into this because that's how I'm going to end up on the For You page and get more exposure.
And I think what kind of like creeps me out about all of this is that I am thinking back to all of the FOMOL Reddit posts I clicked on revolving around this story. And I'm just thinking, like, was that part of it? Like, was me clicking on all of those posts part of the smear campaign? Or was I like talking to bots?
Yeah, that's the other side. So they're the creators and the people with online influence who knowingly or not drove this hate. And then there's sort of the us side of it, who were consuming it and not really realizing what it is we were actually witnessing. So it's sort of like, what is our responsibility when it comes to reading narratives like this online?
Mm-hmm. And before we answer that, I think we should take a break. When we come back, Kate and I will look at how exactly people can manipulate what we see on social media and how this case will only make it easier for publicists to monopolize fandom tactics to hate women online.
It's always fun to dive into the latest rumors, like who's dating who, and who will be on the next season of our favorite show. Well, here's one rumor to squash, the idea that Discover isn't widely accepted. Truth is, Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. That means it's accepted basically anywhere across the country. Don't pay attention to every rumor out there. But remember, it does pay to Discover, based on the February 2024 Nielsen report. Learn more at discover.com/creditcard.
Buffalo! Everyone's favorite slot game is live on DraftKings Casino! Hit the reels whenever and wherever to play for Wild Western wins. New players can play $5 to get a spin on the mystery wheel for a shot at up to $2,000 in casino credits. Download the app and sign up with code ICYMI. Join the stampede with Buffalo on DraftKings Casino now. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 plus. Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility restrictions apply. One per new customer. Play $5 and spin wheel to receive between $10 and $2,000 in non-withdrawable casino credits for select games that expire in 168 hours. Terms at casino.draftkings.com/promos. Ends February 16th, 2025 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time.
It's always fun to dive into the latest rumors, like who's dating who and who will be on the next season of our favorite show. Well, here's one rumor to squash, the idea that Discover isn't widely accepted. Truth is, Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. That means it's accepted basically anywhere across the country. Don't pay attention to every rumor out there. But remember, it does pay to Discover, based on the February 2024 Nielsen report. Learn more at discover.com/creditcard.
And we're back. So let's talk about these alleged bots. What do we for sure know?
Yeah, I think bots, when we hear things like inauthentic behavior online, I think that's where our mind goes. Like, oh, it's a bot. And I think, you know, it's become kind of a common insult. If someone is saying a take that you don't agree with or really passionate about something you don't agree with, you're like, well, that's a bot. It's kind of like this catch-all for just like, I'm not listening to that. I'm discrediting that.
Even on text, when you call out your friend for something, they're like, bot. And it's like, whoa, it's just you and me, Michael.
Yeah, or it's a number I don't recognize. I'm like, bot.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about this case specifically, there's this brand marketing consultant called Terakee. They produced a report in August that concluded that Blake Lively had likely been the object of a, quote, targeted multi-channel online attack. What they did is analyze the entirety of sort of the Google search results for Blake Lively's name, and it found that 35% of those results also included Justin Baldoni. Now, considering Blake Lively, we've known her from Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, Gossip Girl. She's had a long career, and Justin Baldoni is nowhere near 35% of it. If anything, he's at the very, very end. And so they concluded that this was unusual given the length of her career and suggested that the media environment was being manipulated. In the New York Times report about this, they explain these findings and they also place them in context of another similar situation that this has reminded me of, which is the Amber Heard versus Johnny Depp trial.
Mm-hmm. And shout out to investigative journalist Alexi Mustris, host of the podcast Who Trolled Amber. He obtained a million tweets from Johnny Depp fan accounts and learned from a data scientist that around half of those tweets were from inauthentic sources or bots.
And bots did come up kind of in the Blake Lively, Justin Baldoni situation. Mm-hmm. In text messages between Baldoni and his PR team, he's seeing like, oh my God, the narrative has really shifted. And he was kind of worried. He's like, are we using bots? Like, I think we're going too hard. And a member of his team responds, I can fully, fully confirm we do not have bots. And they agree that would be too obvious.
And so if there weren't bots, then what could have been manipulated?
The one thing that we can see happening in these texts that the New York Times published is that Baldoni's team was purposefully placing negative stories about Blake in outlets like the Daily Mail. And this is not super unprecedented. Yeah. But I think the harder pill to swallow is the fact that those stories might have been all we needed to just do the hate campaign ourselves. Like, they just sort of gave us the crumb of a narrative and everyone went with it for the reasons we were talking about earlier. You know, as far as I know, it was mostly regular people who were doing the clip compilations and throwing around their hot takes, which is maybe why it was so easy for us to believe it so readily.
Yeah, because it's not like people are tweeting from Justin Baldoni stan accounts or like Blake Lively stan accounts, these things. It's like regular people you might follow on Twitter who are kind of like helping a bit to propagate the narrative, even if they weren't like directly contacted by publicists or anything like that. And that's something new I saw from this after the New York Times piece came out, like people fully holding their hands up and admitting that it looks like they fell for like a manufactured narrative.
I'm glad it's something people are talking about because it is a really icky feeling. And, you know, it's the kind of the first time I'm seeing people cop to it because, you know, last time with the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial, that was a really intense environment. And I actually did an interview for Embedded with someone who I just saw in a comment on Reddit. They were talking about how they used to be really on the Johnny Depp train, defending him really intensely, and then slowly kind of had their eyes open that maybe they were falling for inauthentic behavior. And so I reached out to her and I asked if she wanted to do kind of an as told to. And I just want to read a paragraph that she said to me that really resonated, especially in light of what's happening now. She told me, "The scariest thing about it was that it didn't feel like I was falling for propaganda at all. I didn't feel like I was being manipulated, though of course I was. I was simply going along with what the whole world was thinking, and there was no other side to the story, which, of course, should have been the clearest sign that it was propaganda. The whole thing started to feel really insidious, like it had been expertly astroturfed and like I had been manipulated to support an abuser. This situation has definitely changed forever how I will look at information on the internet."
And I think a lot of this I've been thinking about as well as we like talk about the Blake and Justin of it all. I mean, that's like one part I am curious about. How do we not keep falling into these traps?
I know. Because, you know, in the ideal world, no one is doing smear campaigns. So it's right. Like we wouldn't have to think about our responsibility in this. But as it is now, we do have one. And I think she makes a good point that if you're seeing wall to wall one narrative on the internet, then that's kind of a good reason to be skeptical.
Yeah. And it's hard because like this is how stan culture and fandom works. You know, you're either a stan, so you worship a celebrity, they can do no wrong, or you're anti, you hate this person, the celebrity, you will do everything you can to bring them down.
Yeah. And that can be all fun and games. You know, I was a stan for Harry and Hermione. I was anti-Ron Hermione. And I went hard for that. So it is fun in games when it's just regular fans who don't really have any power in this situation. But what's unnerving is that these big PR teams, these people with large profiles have clearly noticed this fandom behavior and been like, okay, what if we, with all our power and resources, adopt the same tactics? And clearly it does a lot more damage. They want you to think that one person is wholly good and the other is a nightmare, because that's how PR works.
Mm-hmm. And I will be so honest, you know, I've never known how to feel about cases like these, because the moment I think I'm on one person's side, another piece of evidence will drop, or someone releases like raw footage from set, and I'll be like, whoa, okay, so like, am I supposed to do a 180 flip and side with the other person?
I think, you know, with what we were talking about, how to be more responsible, I think it's totally okay to feel conflicted, because I think what we don't want to do is immediately jump to one side or the other. And sometimes there are situations where there are two flawed people involved and there isn't one wholly good and wholly bad person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I do think the internet, and especially places like Reddit, where there's like an attempt at nuance, I think the internet is still trying to judge things as black and white. And I think more often than not, it's usually the third answer, which is maybe both parties are bad.
And I remember that during Depp v. Heard, I definitely thought the like, oh, they're both bad people line that came up sometimes. I was someone who saw that as a bit of a cop out, but mm-hmm. I would argue this isn't a one-to-one situation. Like,
right.
The allegations are wildly different, but also the power dynamic between Blake and Justin isn't a traditional power dynamic that we're used to.
That's something I keep thinking about, the fact that Blake has like a whole empire with money behind her. She has like a box office juggernaut husband, Ryan Reynolds. She's close with Taylor Swift. And like, I don't want to say that Justin is the underdog here, because, you know, he was the director of the film and he is accused of doing things that made her, Blake, uncomfortable. But if anyone has the power to ruin anyone's career, I kind of assumed it would be Blake ruining Justin's and not the other way around.
I don't know with this whole thing how anyone could really win at this point, mm-hmm. because it was really explosive when the New York Times feature came out. But since then, it's just been like a drop of evidence here, a leaked document there. They're giving a mm-hmm. quote to this outlet. Every time there's a new development, it is small. And ultimately, I'm a little exhausted by it. And so I don't know where we go from here that will be satisfying.
I feel the same. Because I'm having a really hard time knowing where I stand. I think the plethora of evidence, which isn't really evidence, but like information, it is overwhelming. And I actually don't think it is helping either of them to just keep dropping information and hoping the internet will figure it out. I mean, if I try to predict how this plays out in the next year, I imagine Blake Lively is probably not going to be like canceled in any traditional sense. I mean, being married to Deadpool, unfortunately, does have benefits.
Right. And Justin Baldoni, just in comparison to Blake Lively, obviously he's been on a beloved TV show, but he does not at all have the same cachet in Hollywood. Yeah. Like, I think it's entirely possible, depending on how this shakes out, that he walks out of this without a career, or God forbid, goes like the I was canceled.
Right.
You can't say anything anymore. Root.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's suing the New York Times. He's getting sued. His production company is absolutely going to take a hit from the legal fees alone. I wonder if producers and directors and other people in the industry are looking at him, whether or not he even wins these cases, as a liability.
If we're talking timeline, a judge did set a trial date for Baldoni and Lively. It's supposed to happen in March 2026. But I'm like, is this going to be the next Gwyneth Paltrow $1 ski trial?
Iconic trial. But
yeah.
To be honest, it actually, the Depp v. Heard issue had been going on for years before it actually went to trial. And it was only when that trial was happening and blasted across TikTok in little clips that the narrative went as bonkers as it did. So if anything, we haven't even seen the worst of what could happen between these two if there ends up being a trial that plays out in the same way.
If this story, this narrative, this scandal is being extended all the way out to like March 2026, are you going to keep up with it? Is there a reason to keep up with it? Do you even know like where you're going to go to like make sure you get your Baldoni Blake updates?
I think personally, I would sit this out until the trial, which is when we're going to get the information we need. And I think it's a little bit of a consequence of people becoming not just media literate, but media savvy, in the sense that we, maybe not everyone, but people who are interested in this kind of stuff are also aware of like, oh, like the Daily Mail is clearly close with Justin's side, whereas the New York Times is clearly friendly with Blake's side. And you can start to see like, oh, this story came from this team, and it makes it really hard to trust anything, which is when you're really susceptible for believing the wrong things. Right. And so I would say back off. But if you really want to get your fill, I'm going to quote someone who I always quote in everyday life, and that's Alec Baldwin.
Oh,
in
a okay.
extremely unsettling video he once posted about the media, where he urged listeners and viewers to consider the source over and over again. And so that's what I'll say. Consider the source. Make sure you're consuming mindfully. But also, this doesn't concern you unless you are Blake Lively or Justin Baldoni, in which case, thank you for listening to this podcast.
Or maybe we pull an Amber Heard and just move to Spain. I genuinely, genuinely admire her for it. And I want to follow. I want to follow.
That's a great idea, Candace. And to that I say, ole.
Okay, that's the show. We'll be back in your feed on Wednesday, so definitely subscribe. That way, you never miss an episode. Leave us a rating and a review in Apple or Spotify, and tell your friends about us. You can follow us on Twitter at @icymi_pod, and you can always drop us a note at icymi@slate.com.
ICYMI is produced by Alexandra Boti, Candace Lim, and me, Kate Lindsay, with production assistance from AC Valdez. Daisy Rosario is our senior supervising producer, and Hilary Fry is Slate's editor-in-chief. See you online.
Or in Justin Baldoni's text messages.
At the UPS store, we have the key to unlock the world of possibilities, because we'll sign for your packages and protect them from porch pirates. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today.